Today, retro gaming is cool. It's hip to have an NES controller as a belt buckle, or a t-shirt with a big Atari logo on it. I saw a vintage Zelda board game sell for $250 recently on eBay. I had that game when it came out. I bought it new. And at the time, nobody thought I was cool for having it. Well, today on our program, what happens when you unironically grew up as a gamer? This is the 100th episode of our podcast, and we asked you for your stories. We have compiled them here, and we are very pleased to bring them to you today. Well, from www.famicomdojo.tv, it's This Famicom Life. I'm Vink. Every so often on our show, of course, we choose a theme and bring you different kinds of stories on that theme. Today's show, Growing Up as a Gamer. Stories of people gaming as kids and never really getting over it. This program is in several acts. Act 1, My Life is Told by Other People. Act 2, Waiting for Nintendo, a dramatic reading of a written submission. Act 3, The Next Generation That Never Came. This is a story about great disappointment and the 3DO, but it's not what you think. Act 4, a submission by Satoshi Matrix about his conversion to becoming an import retro gamer. Act 5, a submission by user Daniel about his own gaming life. And Act 6, where Sean tells us about the deep-seated trauma that led to his gaming behavior. All this and more. Stay with us. Act 1, My Life is Told by Other People. When we first decided on the podcast theme of growing up as a gamer, I thought I'd probably just tell one of my usual long-winded stories about, well, growing up as a gamer from my memories of being a kid. But I started to think that maybe some of my memories were a little off, and also I just wanted to know what other people thought of the experience of me being a gamer throughout my life. So I decided to interview a few different people from a few different generations and just kind of put together an idea of what they perceive of me. During my early days of gaming, the one person who probably knew me better than anyone else was my brother.
So can you first of all introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Ken. I'm your little brother.
All right. So what do you remember from when we were gaming as kids?
Well, I think everything I learned about video games I learned from you. I had heard of Nintendo, but I think, we were some of the first kids to actually get one, other than our babysitter's son, who just let us watch him play Nintendo all the time.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think I ever actually played the video games myself. I remember watching a lot of video games.
I remember he let me play once. We were playing the Nintendo baseball game, and he convinced me that if I bunted more than 3 times in a row, it would break the game and I'd have to buy it. And I believed him. He said it was in the manual somewhere, just that he couldn't show me.
He was a bully. I guess one of my really memorable memories was DuckTales, when we played DuckTales as a kid. Because I could not do the cane move. I don't know.
The cane move?
Yeah, like I couldn't bounce on the cane. I didn't get the concept.
Oh, the pogo jump, yeah.
Yeah. So I always was like, Kevin! Anytime I needed to. Like, I could walk around and jump, but I couldn't, like, get to any of the high places. I'd be like, Kevin, do the jump. And, yeah. That was a fond memory. I remember being better at you at some games.
Oh, yeah.
ActRaiser.
ActRaiser, like, I loved the simulation parts, but I had so much trouble with the action parts. So, yeah, I just passed the controller over to you.
You had your friends over, too, and none of you could do it. And I was like, I'll try. And you're like, okay, you know, you'll never be able to do it. And I beat it on the first try.
Oh, man, that was a great game. Remember how we used to just watch the opening again and again because the music was so good?
Yeah. And early mode 7.
Yeah, yeah. How it would, like, spin in when whenever you entered one of the different dungeons. Oh, man, that was great. The sequel was not horrible, nearly as good.
There was no simulation. It was just the action parts, but it was even worse than the...
Yeah. Do you think we were cool as kids?
I don't know. I think in our circle of friends we were. But, yeah, I mean, I look back on it now, and, I mean, I didn't really... play sports so much. Well, I guess I did soccer in the summer. I was never good at it, though.
There were some controller throwing moments, I'm sure.
Oh, I got in a lot of trouble for throwing the controller.
Oh, yeah.
I think I got banned for, like, a few days or something, or maybe a week for throwing the controller.
Didn't we both...
It was probably Mega Man, by the way.
Yeah. Weren't we both... You loved that series, especially the first one, but man, it was
such a hard game, yeah. I think I beat the first one, maybe. I got to the boss. I don't know if I ever beat it, though, that I can remember. But I did get to the Wily stage, but I don't think I actually beat it, because it was way too hard.
Well, it's not too late. They're on Virtual Console right now. You should...
Yeah, let's play them on emulator, that way I can
freeze
the game, so I don't have to start over every time.
I'm sure as adults now our reflexes are better.
You would think.
Oh, dear.
I know, sometimes I'm like, well, maybe I was just bad at video games when I was young because, yeah. But
I know I was.
I am better at DuckTales, though. I bought the remix on my Wii U, and, yeah, I can do the pogo jump now without help. So.
Well, we were, like, banned from video games for, like, a week after we rented Double Dragon because we were, like, jumping off things and, like, punching and kicking. I think it was Double Dragon.
Maybe.
Maybe it was Battletoads. I don't know. Some kind of fighting game. So there was definitely a correlation in our parents' mind.
Well, that was the same thing if I watched any, like, movie with, like, martial arts in it.
Yeah.
I got kind of excited and would want to emulate.
Anything else you remember from, I don't know, being brothers playing video games?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, a lot of the games that I've come to love, you know, were recommendations from you. So, and I guess I still, you know, listen to the podcast and get some insights. And, yeah, I've commented a couple times on the forums, but...
Yeah
I do have to correct you sometimes. I think that your memory is different than mine. So maybe I'm wrong, maybe you're wrong, but sometimes I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure that was a different game you were talking about. Or you get... confused.
That's possible. And, it's a lot of games.
So, yeah, I think, when you're a kid and you play a lot of different games, you get them confused. But, yeah, that was,
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your time.
Yep.
Okay.
Then, for a slightly different perspective, I thought it would be useful for me to get some impressions from my parents. Okay, let's try this experiment.
Okay, my name is David. I'm your father. And...
Okay. And I'm June, Kevin's mom.
All right. Well, that's great. This should be a soft interview then.
Right.
So do either of you two play video games?
I don't. Would you consider
The games
your
on
Bejeweled? Would that be?
Yeah, the games on the iPad. Does that count?
Yeah, I guess that counts.
So I'm hooked on the Blitz Bejeweled, but that's basically the only one I play consistently.
Okay. And before that, like, I don't know, back in the 80s when I was really into games, did you play at all?
Yeah, well, you tried to get us, we tried.
Well, we played some games with you. You bought some games and we played games with you. We played that Wii with you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the first Nintendo you got, we tried Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
With a little gun.
Oh, yeah.
Mario Brothers, but I was terrible at it. My guy always fell off a cliff or something.
If I remember correctly, the first time you played that, you waited until you thought we were asleep so you could, like, play it without embarrassment.
Well, that could have been.
Yeah, because we weren't... This is all new to us.
Do you remember we used to rent a Nintendo from the supermarket, wasn't it?
Either that or a Blockbuster.
I think the supermarket. Then we had a Blockbuster and then a Hollywood Video, and then mostly Blockbuster. We rent videos, I thought.
Yeah, but remember we used to actually rent the system before we bought one.
Oh, yeah, yes, we did.
Yeah, I remember that.
Actually, I think that...
And that was to Blockbuster, wasn't it, I think?
No. That was like 29 Supermarket.
Well, that could be.
Oh, okay. Okay, that was a long time ago.
Or maybe Falls IGN. IGA, sorry.
I think, though, the first time we purchased a Nintendo game for the two of you was a turning point, believe it or not, in your social life. Because Nintendo was very popular. It was a common ground for you and the neighborhood kids.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about what to talk about. You just played the game. And I don't know, that was a time you'd start having friends over and you'd play your Nintendo.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So it was actually an attraction to get other people, you know, to come and see you.
Oh my gosh.
And have a good time.
I never really thought about it that way. I guess I always thought video games were kind of making me antisocial.
No, you would have neighborhood kids come over and you'd play together.
Huh. Yeah.
And it was a common ground. It was a common ground for you socially because it was kind of status to have Nintendo back then.
Did Curtis want to come over and play games with you?
Yeah, Curtis would come over.
I think Jonah came over, didn't he play games?
So. Yeah. You're right. I guess that was kind of one of the, like, icebreakers there. Okay.
What I was about to say is we didn't have a lot of money back then, but what we did was that was your Christmas, birthday, / everything present.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first Nintendo was Ken and my birthday and Christmas present for the whole year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it was well worth it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we used to play Duck Hunt. And you used to put the gun right to the screen.
Yeah, I was cheating even back then. Yeah,
but you know that was our first experience.
Well, then there were all those what was that thing that was on a tripod that you?
Oh, the played? Virtual Boy.
Yeah, that was very short lived.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, and before that, we were playing the game that you played on the TV. Ruthie and Gary had one. What was that?
The Intellivision.
Yeah, you played golf and
yeah. That was actually the first.
Oh, and
the very first experience we had was in television.
Yeah,
with your Uncle Gary.
What was that one where it eats up everything? Pac-Man.
Yep.
I remember that. You played that, I think, at when you went to a game center or something. That one was always there.
Yeah. I remember I played it at Shakey's Pizza.
Oh, I know we have a variety of. Things in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you used to collect all kinds of video games. Yeah, I don't really know what to do with them all.
Well, I'll come and collect some of them someday.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'll get back to my questions a little bit. So do you think I took my hobby a bit too far when I was a kid?
I guess I didn't think you did. You were still involved in an awful lot of activities
you're still involved with school
college,
activities.
So no, I didn't. I don't think it took up any. You know, Kim was into buying clothes, and you boys were into buying video games. So that was just your hobby. No, I don't think it interfered with you developing the rest of your interests. No, I was just thinking.
Is that the average time that most people play video games?
I guess I don't really know. I think a lot of people don't play them at all, so.
I don't think it interfered with anything. And maybe you didn't play outside as much and do things when I look back, but I think that was just part of your generation to begin with. And maybe we as parents were a little more worried about you being alone outside and stuff like that. So maybe in the long run we weren't as worried that you were in the house.
Yeah, although video
games... At least we knew where you were and that you were safe.
I guess I was a bit of an indoor kid. I don't know. I did camping and stuff, too, you know.
Well, you were involved with Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
You made Eagle Scouts, so you spent a lot of time with Scouts.
Yeah.
And you were in all the school plays and the concerts and the choirs and
well, I was,
other things besides video games.
I really do sound like a nerd, don't I?
What? Camping, Boy Scouts? That's nerd?
You know, I think it's cool. I think it's cool. All right. Well, anything else? Anything you remember from that period?
Just that you were always interested in getting video games for Christmas or new game systems, and that you still have a lot of stuff in our house.
Okay, I'll clean it up.
We don't know what to do with.
Yeah.
Intent.
All right. Well, I don't know. You could probably make a small fortune putting all that up on Craigslist or something.
Yes, but we don't want to spend our retirement doing that.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. I think I got what I need. I'm gonna have to interview some other people as well and get kind of a complete picture. But this went pretty well. You know, I never really thought about the positive effects it had on my social life.
It really did.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what's this for? This is for your
his podcast.
His podcast. Oh, for a program on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I have to say, I wasn't expecting the interview to turn out that way. It was a lot more positive than I thought. I thought it would be kind of a funny little piece, and them sharing their frustrations of me hogging the TV and things like that. It was really, really fun to hear such a positive spin on my previous gaming life. So continuing that, I thought I'd do an interview with my wife. It didn't go quite the same. And now I just want to interview someone who's really special in my life, my wife. And let's see what it is like to live with someone like me. So I hope I'm not surprising you with this question, but you know that I'm a gamer, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And are you a gamer yourself?
I don't think so. Am I?
I don't really think so either. So, what's it like living with my habit?
I guess I don't know. It's it was okay before.
Wait. So, what? It was okay before. I don't know if I like where this is going. Okay, and now.
And now, you know, you talk about games like I know the games.
Well, you do, because I talk about them all the time.
Yeah, but sometimes I don't listen. Pretend.
Oh, I'm learning a lot today. I mean, you definitely know some stuff. I mean, okay. The Mario Kart game we're playing. What is the name of that game?
Oh, the new one?
Yes.
Mario Kart? is your name?
There's a number. There's a number.
Oh, there's a number?
Yes.
11? I don't know.
All right. Well, okay. Not a game. It's 8.
Oh,
it's 8.
Okay.
It's 8. Okay. That's okay. There'll be one.
Okay.
Okay, so other than it being really boring and you pretend to listen to me, is there any good part about living with someone who's a gamer?
I need time to think about.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, I'm gonna try to bring back your memory. So this let's go back a lot of years.
Okay.
We had just started dating. It was my first time to bring you back to my apartment. Ever. And I very romantically bring out Donkey Kong. do you remember this?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, we can play this. And you played?
Mm-hmm.
So I think my big question is, why did you marry me?
when we were playing the Donkey Kong,
the
drums thing, I was thinking like, what are we doing?
But you still married me.
Yeah.
So it's partially your fault.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. That's a big mistake.
I don't like the way this interview is going. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I gotta reflect for a while.
Ask your daughter.
And so I did interview my daughter. She's only 4 years old, and she's still trying to come to terms with the English language and the Japanese language, balancing them both out. But I think she gave a pretty insightful interview, so here it is.
Hello, Sarah.
Yes?
Can I interview you for my podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. Sarah, yes? What's this?
This is a Pac-Man.
Yeah, that's Pac-Man. Is that your toy?
Yeah.
Is it a game?
Yeah, this is the reds.
The red what?
This is red and blue, and this is the orange.
Oh, are those ghosts?
Yeah. This one's a red ghost, blue ghost, and a yellow, and an orange ghost.
Do you like playing Pac-Man?
Yeah. This is a green button.
Yeah, there's a green button on there.
Yeah.
And...
This is a Pac-Man.
Sarah, do you know what this is?
This is a Family Condoja game.
Well, it's not a game. This is a DVD.
Yeah, DVD. What? Look.
Do you know who this is?
This is a... What's this guy?
Who's that guy? You don't know who that guy is? Who's that guy?
Who's this dog guy?
That's Daddy.
Yeah, Daddy.
And do you know who this is?
This is a Mario game.
Do you like games, Sarah?
Yeah.
Sarah, does Daddy like games?
Yeah. This is a Mario game.
Yeah. What game does Daddy like?
Daddy likes Mario.
Yeah, Daddy likes Mario.
Yeah.
Do you think Daddy plays too many games?
Yeah.
Do you like to watch Daddy play video games?
Yeah.
Yeah? What game do you like to watch?
Mario.
Yeah, you like Mario? Why do you like Mario?
I want a Mario for Peach Princess.
Ah, the Peach Princess. You like that one?
Yeah, the Peach Princess.
Oh, is she cute?
Yeah. Daddy, what do you want to try her?
Well, I think that I'd like to play lots of different games.
Different called the Mario?
Yeah, different Marios, I guess. Sarah?
Yes?
Do you want to play games with Daddy?
Yeah.
What's better, to play games with Daddy or to read a book?
To read with Daddy.
Read with Daddy, okay.
Like...
Yeah?
This is my run and Mario game.
Yeah.
I want to turn the Peach Princess. He wants to turn the Peach Princess.
Oh. What do you like better, Sarah? Mario game or iPad?
The Mario game.
Really? You like the Mario game more?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. This game's really old.
Yeah.
I'm holding... This is Super Mario 3.
Yeah.
You like this one?
Yeah.
Why?
I want the Princess Peach.
Well, she's not... Okay, she's not a big character in that game. What's that guy?
This is...
Who's that guy?
What's this?
That's Koopa.
Koopa, that's right. And...
There's Koopa.
Yeah.
Do you like that guy?
Yeah.
What animal is Koopa?
Koopa's just too rare. That's too scary.
He's too scary. Okay.
I'm with the Peach Princess.
I know you do.
Holding the Koopa.
Yeah, you're holding the Koopa.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it strange that Daddy has a Mario toy?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's a little strange.
Daddy, I want the Peach Princess.
Okay.
The Peach Princess can the Koopa, and the Koopa and this Koger. Like a Koopa and this Koger. The Mario is too, like, Koopa-like Koger's name. like a circle. Circle to play Koopa.
That's right. You gotta turn Koopa in a circle.
I guess a Koopa.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sarah.
Yeah. I can't do something, Holger.
You're so cute, but I don't know what you're saying right now.
I want the Peach Princess.
Okay, I got that. Okay, thank you, Sarah. We got
to turn the Peach Princess turn around.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And she...
The balloon is too small.
Yeah, she found a balloon. I think she likes that better. Okay.
Can you go get a big one, Rick? Sorry, Dad. This is too big work.
Thank you to all the members of my family who agreed to be interviewed for this piece.
Thank you.
That song was called Pyramid of Sand by our good friend Justin. You can find out more about him and his music at www.octorock.net. Act 2, Waiting for Nintendo. This next submission is from Swiss gamer Olek, who is the only one to take up our challenge of write something and have one of us read it dramatically. Unfortunately, Olek made the terrible choice of choosing me to read it, but I'll do my best.
Back in 94-95, I didn't have a Super Nintendo then, only NES and Game Boy. At one department store, they had a huge sale of one SNES game, about $6 each. That was about the price of a gaming magazine. There were about 40 to 50 copies of that one game. I run home to get my pocket money. I was 11 at the time. And I bought that game. Why? Because it was demoed in a nearby store some weeks prior, and I had an old magazine lying around with a praising review. I also liked the many ways the critter could die. So I brought home my first and very own Super Nintendo game. But I didn't have the system. So I kind of started to obsess over this game. Reread the packaging, the manual, reread that old article about this game. I asked all my friends if they knew someone with a Super Nintendo so that I could play my game. But nobody had one. It wasn't until a month or two later, during vacation at my uncle's, his kids had a friend who knew a friend with the Super Nintendo we could visit. So, I was finally able to play Bubsy. It was fun. We played for about 1 hour only, but I managed to get to the second stage. And watching Bubsy die in different, horrible ways is what still brings me back to it. There you have it. My quest to play my own copy of a bad SNES game. Thank you, Olek. Act 3, The Next Generation That Never Came. This next piece is by a good friend of ours, Tregorn. He also produced and edited it.
This is a story about love and heartbreak. This is a story about broken promises. This is a story about a next generation that never came. But first, like anyone attempting vaguely linear storytelling, we have to start at the beginning. And that's when we go back roughly 20 years. The mid-90s were an exciting time to be a gamer. Everything in the industry was moving. Everything was changing. Sega was tossing out CD packages to slap onto your Genesis and... it made no sense. It made no sense whatsoever, but everyone was trying stuff. Nintendo almost came out with a CD-based system, but most importantly, a crazy man named Trip Hawkins, founder of EA, created the 3DO group. And they invented not a console, but a set of specifications for a console. The 3DO Interactive Multiplayer. And it was awesome. I didn't own one, but a good friend of mine did, and it was my obsession. It was my favorite thing. If there was any news about it, I read it. If there was any game previews, I saw them. If there was any TV coverage, because weirdly enough, this stuff got TV coverage, I was watching it. It was truly great. And it was just going to get better. Because in 1995, my friend Jesse handed me an article. I don't remember what video game magazine it was. But it said there was going to be a new 3DO. A sequel system. A next generation. It was going to be sold both as an independent system and as an add-on for the existing 3DO units. It was going to have graphics far surpassing anything we had ever dreamed of. The processor was supposed to be blazing fast. This was the best thing you could ever imagine. And it was going to be called the M2. The M2. And the M2 became my obsession. It became everything I needed to have. I ate up every screenshot that was out there. Did I know they were secretly pre-rendered and impossible for any modern hardware to produce? No, it was the 90s. We ate up that marketing BS like it was candy. I read every article. I followed everything I could. If it was mentioned on a magazine cover, by God, I read that magazine. It was going to be the best console ever produced. This was a golden age, and we were living in the future. Or at least, that's what I thought. The story out of 3DO kept changing. First, the ability to run it as an add-on for the original 3DO systems disappeared. And then, the release date kept getting pushed back. And back. And back. And back. At some point, the 3DO company sold the M2 project to hardware partner Matsushita, and it became the Panasonic M2. And it kept getting delayed. And even though we saw game previews like D2 that looked incredible, it was still delayed. And then one day, we stopped hearing anything. Because Panasonic had quietly axed the M2. And it wasn't because there was anything wrong with it. The hardware worked. Heck, Konami even released several ill-fated arcade games using it. And sure, those arcade games failed, but only because they kept accessing the disc when they were CD-based. In a home console, that wouldn't have been a problem. No. It was canceled because Panasonic didn't think they could compete with Sony, Sega, and Nintendo. They didn't think they could win. And because of that, every single one of us lost. The M2 hardware lived on, powering coffee vending machines and car dealership kiosks. The people who interacted with it completely unaware that they were using the greatest console that never was. Most games for the system got scrapped, or in the case of D2, got rewritten and released on the slightly less ill-fated Dreamcast. It was a dark time. As for me, well, I was heartbroken. But maybe I learned a lesson that day. Maybe I learned that I shouldn't get my hopes up for things that I'm not sure about. I don't know. Personally, I liked getting excited about stuff. Still do. And I was okay. All hope wasn't lost. It was still the late 90s. I had other stuff to look forward to. You see, right around the same time that I found out the M2 was canceled, I read another article about a sequel to one of my favorite games. It was on the PC, too, so I didn't have to worry about the fickleness of the hardware business. Nothing was going to stop this game from shipping on time. Yeah. I was really excited for Duke Nukem Forever.
You can find more of Trey Dorn's writing and music at trhonline.com.
Act 4.
how Satoshi Matrix became an import gamer.
I've been playing video games since I was really young, with Nintendo being my gateway drug. Growing up on a farm, I seldom visited arcades as a youngster, and so my entire world was just the few games I had for my NES and eventually Super Nintendo. My parents got divorced right when the 16-bit era was starting to heat up. My mom's house had the Nintendos, and my dad had bought a Genesis and Sega CD for his place. It's a little embarrassing to say, but to this day, I associate Nintendo with my mother and Sega with my father. Maybe this is why I don't take sides when it comes to Super Nintendo versus Genesis. You know, everyone else was all into that, and I was kind of never into that. Maybe I was even lucky, being able to experience games on both platforms when most kids had only a single console. As the years went by, I acquired more systems, and the leap to 3D was not one I particularly welcomed. I was already used to load times through the Sega CD, so there wasn't a problem there, but there was just something off-putting about those early polygonal games that I hated at the time. I was a really stubborn kid back then, disliking the PlayStation because I thought the D-pad was terrible, and that was pretty much my only reason for not liking the system. I remember thinking that Mario 64, for instance, on the N64, should have had levels that were like the classic Mario Brothers instead of a hub world, and, you know, the paintings and all that. It was just, you know, little things like that made me kind of prefer the way the games used to be as opposed to this new direction of 3D gaming. It was around that time I eventually started to look backwards and wanted to play games for older systems rather than games for on newer platforms. Since I only had a small library of games to start with, it didn't matter to me if the games were already several years old because the experience would be new to me anyway. I distinctly remember my friends at school going on and on about GoldenEye and games like that, and although I had an N64, I was far more interested to talk about games like Lunar the Silver Star on Sega CD or Little Samson on the NES. To me, those were the kind of games that were worth getting excited about. GoldenEye was decidedly not. If it's possible to be a hipster at age 10, I guess I was kind of that. About the time when eBay sprang up is when I got my first job babysitting, and I blew all my money I made on older games. I began to amass a collection of consoles from even before my time, such as the Master System or the Atari 2600. Games like that were more exciting to me than whatever latest was coming out on the PlayStation or N64. This was also the time when the internet started to become a major thing, and I first heard whispers about the Nintendo Famicom. I had never imported anything before, and even as a young teenager, the prospect of getting a Famicom, somehow figuring out how to hook it up and play games in Japanese, was both exciting and completely frightening. I still remember the winning bid I made in 2002. Almost $400 spent got me an original model Famicom, a Famicom disk system, the Hudson Famicom rack that holds two together, an AV Famicom, a discrete hardware clone of the Famicom, a Japanese power glove, controllers, hookups, and 70 games across the Famicom and disk system, some of which turned out to be pirate multicards containing yet more games I had never played before, like Nuts and Milk. When that package arrived, I was floored by how completely awesome the Famicom was, how different it was from the NES, and how games would simply work when you plug them in, and you wouldn't have to, blow in the games or have games that gave you that blinking light. You know, the Famicom was just this magic thing to me. Growing up a gamer has defined my life in many profound ways, influencing my taste in games, movies, and so many more things. Even my career choice, computer programming, is a direct result of my passion for gaming. If it wasn't for those systems that I got as a little kid, I don't know what I would be doing today. I really don't. Well, anyway, I'll leave it at that. Once again, congratulations on 100 episodes. Best wishes to you two. This is Satoshi Matrix, signing out.
Make sure you visit Satoshi Matrix's YouTube channel, which is linked in our show notes. Act 5, A Gaming Life. This is another submission from one of our listeners, Daniel.
Hello, Sean, Vink, and Dojo Disciples. My name is Daniel. Most of my gaming past was done on the mobile scene of things, and my first system was the Game Boy Pocket. I love playing it a lot. I had games like Super Mario Land 2, Donkey Kong Land 3, and Pokemon. I put tons of time into those particular games, and they're some of my favorites on the system. I then got a Game Boy Color, and so forth, and I have a 3DS XL now, and portable gaming is still one of the things I prefer. Even though I feel like some games just aren't as fun due to the any real feel of consequence for messing up, like in Super Mario 3D Land and New Super Mario Bros. 2, where dying is more of an inconvenience than something that helps you learn from your mistakes. They practically shower you in lives to the point where it really just feels like lives are there for the nostalgia factor. If lives don't feel rewarding to earn, why should I even have them? I feel like New Super Mario Bros. 2 started as a Wario game, and then they decided to change the stars to Mario and Luigi or something. It's just weird to have a non-Wario game where the goal is to collect 2 million coins, among other things. My first non-handheld console was the GameCube that I got for Christmas. It would have been a PlayStation 2 if not for the fact that the GameCube came with Super Mario Sunshine, which is also my favorite 3D Mario. I know a lot of people don't like it. It's not that I don't like 64 and Galaxy, I just didn't have as much fun with them. I later got a Wii, and Nintendo is tempting me to want to get a Wii U. However, since I might be studying abroad next year, it would sit around and for a long time without being used. While not entirely related to console gaming, I've mostly been a Game Boy and PC kid while growing up, and I just don't like playing games on consoles as much, even though I've accumulated a fairly large library of Wii and GameCube games. My family started to like making snide remarks about the games I was playing, and I felt less and less willing to use TV while everyone else was around, which is why I prefer PC gaming, because I have my own screen, and I don't have to have speakers for the sound, and this is why the Wii U appeals to me for the potential of being able to play on the controller. The PC gaming may as well count towards the console gaming side of things, as most multi-platform games come out on it. Though my PC isn't powerful enough to run them at the highest resolutions and best graphical settings, that's not what I aimed to do with my PC anyways, as I mostly enjoy playing indie games, although there are some AAA titles in there every so often, but I generally play them years after they were new. The only real console with actual exclusives, I feel anyway, is Nintendo. Sure, Sony and Microsoft have their exclusives, but they're generally not the ones I want to play. The other games people talk about on those consoles get ported to PC with varying quality, but generally enough to play through it. You also have games that are exclusive, and then they get released for everything else. So really, Nintendo is the only company with exclusives I actually want to play and can't play anywhere else. I'll never forget my roots. I just wish games on the Wii U and 3DS were cheaper. I find it difficult to justify paying more than $20 for a game due to all the sales Steam and good old games have having spoiled me. I've also learned that with over 100 games on my Steam account that if I don't want a game when it's new, I'll just wait till it gets cheaper and buy it then, though Nintendo seldom drops the prices on their own games. I still really enjoy gaming and hope for the best for the customer in the coming years.
Let's say thank you enough for me. Joy-Con Mark II, automatic troubleshooting, 16 shots in a second. Okay, now let's play some deep dive.
That was the previously unaired full version of the Amaritone song Famicom Thrash, which we use a clip of in recent episodes of the Famicom Dojo podcast. The lyrics are a little hard to decipher, but the full lyrics are available in our show notes, so please check them out. They're actually really, really entertaining. Act 6. You know what they say about sequels. What Famicom Dojo podcast would be complete without a contribution from the other half of the Famicom Dojo crew, Sean Orange? Here is his piece tackling the subject of growing up as a gamer.
I have a lot of embarrassing holes in my retro gaming experience. Some games I've played for more hours than I can count, but only ever the first handful of levels. The ones I did get the privilege of dissecting and beating are usually sequels to popular games. Even though I've beaten Super Mario Bros. For decades, I still haven't played all of it. Let me explain. My first gaming machine wasn't a console. It was an Apple IIe, the most advanced computer PC of its kind in the early 80s. Before I even knew how to read, I was loading 5 1/4-inch floppy disks, navigating text menus, and using a joystick to dodge traffic in Frogger, scale an industrial juicing machine in Apple Cider Spider, avoid Nazis in Castle Wolfenstein, or Smurfs in the hacked Castle Smurfenstein, trap spirits in my own Ghostbusters franchise, beat Dr. J to the hoop in my first ever EA game, and rescued or indiscriminately squished POWs in Choplifter. The day we upgraded from the original pea-green blurry monitor to a color display was a revelation of what games could truly be. I don't think I even knew yet what an Atari or Intellivision was, but if I did, I certainly didn't care. Given that background, I can't remember what made the NES the system I had to own, although it was most likely Nintendo's pervasive marketing strategy. TV commercials and shows like Captain N the Game Master that made me want a zapper and a sweet leather jacket. And then the cereal! You're kidding me? What kid could possibly resist? The neighbors in the house behind mine had a baker's half dozen of kids, and they also had a Nintendo Entertainment System fairly soon after launch. That didn't come until later when I knew them. Before then, it was just a place I would spend a lot of my time. This was before I was even in school, so all I got to do all day was play. I learned to ride my bike in their backyard. When playing Masters of the Universe, I would strip down to my red underwear with the yellow elastic band, intended, I think, as part of a Superman Halloween costume, but pulled double duty as a pale imitation of He-Man's furry Speedo. In 1985, I picked my first kitten out of a litter that their cat had. He was gray. Like an NES. After they got the console, playing it was the first thing I wanted to do when I went over to their house, until it became the only reason I would go to see them. I remember my mother explaining to me when they finally got fed up with this behavior that I can't be friends with someone just to play with their toys. I did have other friends, though. New ones I met when I started to go to school. My best friend Chris got an NES in 1986, so it's easy to guess whose house I would walk to every morning before school started, even though it was slightly out of the way. But we had more in common than just video games, and I like to think I was old enough finally to take my mother's advice to heart. It was with Chris that I got to play a lot of classic games like Contra, but also some of the oddballs I still love to this day. Super Pitfall, Adventure Island, and Bionic Commando, just to name a few. However, the lack of save function on most of those early games, and the limited time before the start of school every morning, meant that we just played the same titles in the same first few levels over, and over, and over, and over again. But we didn't care. We loved every second of it. Adventure Island was a particular favorite. That music was just so catchy. And what kid didn't love skateboards? Bart Simpson had a skateboard. And the Ninja Turtles. Cowabunga, dudes! Did I say we loved every second of it? Well, mostly. Perhaps it was just the gratitude of being able to play, but I realized in retrospect that Chris was really protective of his NES and the time other kids got to play with it. He created complicated rules for when we had to switch the controller between us, getting to the point that if I happened to be playing a part that he liked, I would more often than not have to hand it over. And, of course, we were limited to his library of games, but could only play the handful that he was obsessed with at the moment. This seemed like a small price to pay since the console wasn't mine, but the rules would occasionally become so one-sided that his parents would step in to restore balance, or insist that maybe I should go home and do something more fun than watch Chris play a game all afternoon, if they'd only seen me in college. I think it's because of these rules and limited time that I never played much Super Mario Bros. That didn't involve warp zones. I can point out every secret pipe and even do the Minus World trick like no one's business, but put me into World 1-3 and I'm totally useless. Even though it's been nearly 30 years since the game came out, I have yet to play the entire thing in linear fashion. Realizing this wasn't enough, or perhaps feeling bad they couldn't afford to get me my own, or perhaps just to stop me from asking for one every 5 seconds when I was home, my parents would occasionally rent an NES. This was before the heyday of companies like Blockbuster. Grocery stores were the rental outlet of choice, and at least one of them in town would host not only an impressive selection of titles, but rented out the console itself for a sizable deposit, and what I could only assume was an exorbitant daily fee. I knew it would be a weekend full of Nintendo when I would come home from school on Friday to a black textured suitcase lined with dark gray foam, stowing each component of the console in its shock-absorbent casing, like the pieces of a movie villain's sniper rifle, which looked nothing like a weapon when taken apart, but assembled would blow anyone away. Sorry, the metaphor got away from me for a second. This is how I would play games I was never able to try at a friend's house. Skate or Die, TNC Surf Design, The Legend of Zelda, the version of Ghostbusters I didn't like nearly as much as the Apple II version of the game, Back to the Future, Part 2 and 3, you name it. With renting, I was finally able to expand my gaming horizons, and for a change I would have friends visiting me to play. This happened often enough that I became fairly adept at attaching the console to the TV myself. Which was actually no small feat because this was an older model with separate UHF and VHF antennas and those two-prong screws, so you had to have an adapter to get the NES's RF to screw into it. Of course, learning this talent meant that on Sunday I would have to reverse this process myself. A double-edged sword before I even knew what that meant. Why wouldn't a sword have two edges? Is that a weapon upgrade in Zelda? And then it finally happened, ending this vicious cycle forever. Christmas of 1988... I opened up the box for my NES Zapper set. This was the original, before the US law led to creation of the Blaze Orange Zapper. The NES you see in Famicom Dojo videos since the first episode is the one from my childhood, over 25 years old now. But at the time, the games I got with the system were unfamiliar to me. Sure, there was the Mario Duck Hunt combo cartridge, but my first game, the one I truly owned just for me, was Legend of Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. And I loved it. Most people knocked this game for being too different from the original classic, which I also loved. But I was stunned, and in love with this one too. This was my game. Now, I hadn't played Faxanadu at all, and I was later surprised to learn that Battle of Olympus wasn't a sequel, but I will defend Zelda 2 to the ends of the earth as an important installment in the Zelda series. I mean, Link's name was in the title! It was gold like the original Zelda cartridge, which I wouldn't add to my collection for almost a decade. The manual was gorgeous, even though I've long since lost it. But I think most importantly, there are a lot of positive memories associated with it of me and my sister taking turns playing it. And I don't think I forced any crazy rules about when to switch off. Or at least I don't like to think I did. This sequel trend continued with the next games I would come to own. Simon's Quest, Super Mario Bros. 2, Mega Man 2, Skate or Die 2. I guess my parents' philosophy was that they were going to shell out scores and scores of dollars for my sister and me to play a new game. It had to be one we hadn't played countless times before at a friend's house or through renting. I think the one time they had deviated from this policy was on the following Christmas, when they bought the game Willow. Yes, the NES adaptation of the Warwick Davis movie of the same name. It's actually a really fantastic action RPG. and was a nice way for me to ease into the RPG concept after playing games like Zelda. Here's where the problem came in. From the time we'd opened our presents in the morning until dinner that evening, I had already played through the entirety of the game. My parents were furious. Of course, at the time, I had no idea how much it actually cost to buy an NES game, and even if I did, I wouldn't have much concept of what that meant compared to other things. I assured them this was fine, and it was a game I loved enough to play again. It's one I still own 25 years later. I think I have the box, too. Of course, I suppose that the amortized cost over the last 2.5 decades is little comfort compared to the bowling balls or fuzzy dice or whatever it was people would buy in the 80s that weren't video games. What my parents didn't realize at the time, and I hope to save them money in the long run, there was a plus side to sitting on a stack of games that you weren't playing anymore, and that was the ability to lend them to other people and borrow others in return. This concept was completely foreign to me, and I'm sure it was suggested by a friend who coveted one of my many sequels. You didn't borrow Apple II games, you made your own copies. If you wanted to play a friend's NES game, you went to their house. But once I understood what was going on, I really got into it. I got to swap games with friends and family I wouldn't see for weeks or months at a time. But this also led to a lot of pain. Now that it was the late 80s, more and more games came equipped with save features, including my special treasure, The Adventure of Link. I traded the game for something I can't even remember anymore, to a friend. Not even a friend, a friend's brother. And after a while, I got a little twitchy. I wanted my game back. Maybe I didn't like the game I borrowed. Maybe I just wanted to play Zelda again. But when I did get Link back, the cartridge was a little banged up, discarded in some corner. That made me mad, but even worse, all of my save files were gone. I mean, I only used one, but so did my sister. There had still been one open, one that I was sure I had told this friend's brother he could use. But there it was, all the files wiped except for this one save with a foreign name. I was furious. But he insisted that when you lend a game to someone, you can do whatever you want with it. I think my sister was actually more upset about this than I was and swore off the game forever. To this day, I don't think she's ever picked it up again. This revelation about game borrowing must not have made it to my other friend from whom I had borrowed Dragon Warrior. While Dragon Warrior had save games, I don't remember if it just had the one or if I insisted on playing my friend's copy, but it was my first RPG, so I didn't understand about attack stats and level grinding. I was a Legend of Zelda fan. I just fought things that looked cool and equipped stuff that made me feel badass. So when I bought a sword that was less awesome than my friend's equipped weapon, he demanded that I not return the game until I'd earned enough gold to buy back the one I'd replaced. It was a miserable experience. I had to do all this work, and I couldn't even play the game or get to keep it after I was done. It's even possible this experience soured me to RPGs for years to come. I mean, Link can't lose the magical sword once he's gotten it, so it never occurred to me this would be a big deal. I don't think I played and beat Dragon Warrior on my own until I was almost graduated from high school in the late 90s. By then, I had my own private setup away from the family TV, with the NES hooked up to a tape deck for sound, and my old Apple II color monitor for the video. Find a time to play? Not a problem. It does occur to me after telling this story that my love of retro games has more to do with some deep-seated trauma than I would care to admit. While I did amass a respectable NES library with a dozen or so games that I still own to this day, there were a bunch of titles I never owned myself or fully got to explore because of their supposed persistent availability. Eventually, those kids stopped playing, or moved away, or I moved away, or they sold their consoles for a Genesis. Even almost 30 years later, there is an entire class of NES games that seem too lofty for me to dare call my own. That is a game you play at someone else's house. Or maybe it's more positive than that. Maybe it's about not being able to replace those memories as easily as you can replace a cartridge. And maybe that's why, to this day, I have still never owned a copy of Contra.
When talking about retro gaming, one thing that we have to keep in mind is that retro hello, Sean.
Hi.
Is retro? I'm actually doing our This American Life parody, so I
oh
it's, there's
sorry
not
no any... right I did submit my piece for that already. I'm sorry. I just saw you online and thought that you were ready to do another episode. Okay, all right. So we're doing the thing still. So maybe I should go into my voice, and we'll talk about tote bags and our pledge drive coming up for episode 100 to keep the show. No, that's not what we're doing.
No, that's creepy. No, you have to do the Ira Glass type. Oh no! I've gone into Shatner. Okay.
Okay.
Whatever. Let's just talk. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
What's up? How you been?
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a way to end this because we had some really good submissions. This is the first, but gosh, I think we'll do it again sometime. It went really well. And when we started this, did you think we'd even get to 100? I mean.
We started it because conflicting schedules and trying to get videos out. Yeah. It's like we still have things to talk about, and then while we were trying to plan it, we're just like, hey, we can do this podcast based on us just talking about things. People won't want to listen to us just talk, right? And apparently, we were right.
yeah, we're right. Nobody cares.
Oh. No, yeah. Against all expectations, we're episode 100. Although it took long enough.
It did. Well, not. I mean, we got 2 out of 3 weeks, I guess, when you think about it. It took us about 3 years to get here.
Yeah, we should have done in about two, a little bit less.
Yeah, we should have done it about two. But, you know, for when we do get on a clip, we've got an episode every week. And past this, I think for a few weeks in a row, we'll have an episode. And then, of course, I'm moving.
Yes, which means more regularity with everything.
Yeah, I would think so, because I will actually be able to get set up for a little bit of studio space. I'll have my own game room, which once it's set up, I should be able to put out content a lot more easily. So I think I'm one of the bottlenecks right now with our production schedule. So,
well, you know, me going on vacation and having another kid and, you know, stuff like that. That
I tends told to... you not to have the second kid.
But he's so adorable.
Yeah, I know. But what's more adorable? A living, breathing human child or YouTube likes? Just think about
it. This is a trick question, isn't it?
I'm talking a lot of YouTube likes.
I don't know.
We're talking four digits.
That thumb... Oh, no, seriously though, thank you for being with us this long. We've done the podcast now for a little over 3 years, and the videos for 7.
Yep.
And it's been amazing doing Famicom Dojo, and we want to keep doing more for you. So next episode we'll have some announcements.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes. I like announcements.
Yeah.
No, announcements is not a fun word, but. This will be great. This will be great.
I'm doing that politician thing where it's like they announce if they're going to run for an office or not. It's like, next week I'll have an announcement, but this is the announcer for the announcement.
Yeah. Oh,
I feel terrible. We've finally arrived.
The game industry's been doing that a lot too lately. The announcement, like a countdown timer.
Oh.
And then when the timer runs out, it says that on the 3rd, there'll be an announcement about ?
Sounds like the subject of another episode.
It does sound like the subject of another episode. Oh, we've got we were out for about a month, so we've got a long list of things that we've got to talk about. Anyway, we just really would like from the bottom of our hearts to thank everyone for helping us, for supporting us, for yelling at us when we don't have an episode out for a while. No, seriously, we need that sometimes.
Except that guy. You know who you are.
Seriously, I can't wait until we're at our 200th episode. And at the rate we go, 3 years from now?
Yeah, we'll both have 3 kids by then.
Oh, my. Okay, predictions.
Yeah.
For when we hit episode 200.
All right.
Okay.
That's 2017?
Yep.
Sometime? Okay. So my oldest will be going to kindergarten,
uh-huh.
Which means more free time.
Okay, sorry.
Well, let's see. I will be much closer to 40 and maybe won't be interested in video games anymore.
Whatever. Whatever. Yeah, and the flying cars and everything like that.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. I expect to have hoverboards for each of my kids. You heard me, Mattel. And Pepsi Perfect stacked up in my fridge.
All right. Let's see. Predictions. I think, okay, this is 3 years from now.
We'll finally finish season two.
I think we'll be really Listen, don't go off the deep end here.
I'm sorry.
We need realistic predictions. Like, I think Broken Age will finally be done.
Right.
Or so we'll probably be talking about that in episode 200. Let's see. Nintendo will have a new handheld.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. New TV console or a hybrid? I think it's going to be a hybrid.
I don't know. I have a feeling they might try to get one more standalone off. It depends how far. If they've already have one far into development, which they might, you know, they probably started it before they realized the Wii U was going to tank. You know what I mean? But the 3DS is nearing the end of its commercial life. So
no, already? When did that come out?
Well, no, it hasn't been out that long, but like it's already 11. So either it needs a new model which brings in something cool, you know, because it's only had its regular model, its big model, and its like doesn't fold model.
Well, I don't know. I get on screen notifications now when a friend comes online.
Yeah, but that's a software. That's not a new model. It doesn't,
you're right. There's not going to be another hardware refresh, I don't think, of the 3DS.
So either they think of something like the DSi or whatever, but I really don't know if there's much more they can tack on to this one. I think it's time for a new revision. Wii U 3 years from now, I bet they will have announced a successor, but I don't think it'll be out yet.
Yeah, five years though, since it was That E3 will see something, I think.
Yeah. Let's see. 3 years from now. I still won't have beat Mass Effect 3.
Oh, come on.
Ooh. I'll have watched at least two series by that time of Star Trek The Next Generation, if I continue going at the same pace I'm going.
Oh, good grief. Well, do you think either of us will own an Xbox One by then?
You might.
I don't know. Maybe. 3 years? Maybe.
Yeah. I will buy an Xbox One when it is $50 with a game.
Oh, how about this? Which iPhone are you going to have?
Ooh, let's see. New one's coming out probably next month or announced next month. And then I probably won't get that one because I've got a 5S. So 7, iPhone 7 or 6S. I don't know, depending on how cheap I am.
All right, well, I am going to get it. The one that's coming out this year, and because mine's 4 years old, and based on that, I will still have it in 3 years.
I think I will have a PlayStation 4.
All right,
but I don't think I'm going to play it very much.
Oh no, I will definitely have one by then.
It's just because I mean I don't think I can resist having, you know, one of the, you know, graphically something systems, but right now there's nothing really that's on it that really floats my boat.
Well, I got to get Dragon Age and the next Mass Effect and all the special editions of all the previous generation games that I foolishly bought for Wii U instead of my 360.
I wonder if I'm going to do a 180 on my downloadable content thing. I don't know. Well, maybe eventually. Hey, let's talk about that at the next podcast.
Okay. Next week. Really, for real. Next week, new episode.
Yep, new episode. Okay, any other predictions? This is a time capsule. We're probably going to play this clip during the 200 episodes. So.
Oh, good grief. I will have gone back to TGS at least once.
Ooh. Yeah, I'll add myself to that one. I think we will be on series 3.
I think we'll be beyond it. I'm just guessing because next year's the NES 30th anniversary. So,
oh yeah, we got to do something for that. I'll still be playing games and I'll still be wishing I had more time to play video games.
Right on.
Well, our program was produced today by myself and Sean Orange, with contributors Trey Dorn, Satoshi Matrix, Oleg, and Daniel. Musical help by the Amari Tones and Octorok. This Famicom Life is distributed by Famicom Dojo. Management oversight for our show by our boss, Sean Orange, who, despite my many protests, is always telling me about the current condition of his underpants.
I have a lot of embarrassing holes.
See you next time.